Kursk is a local Winnipeg grinding hardcore band that's been playing discordant political anthems together since 2004. They've released several EPs with other international DIY bands and are currently working on their first full-length LP due next spring. Kursk are Sarah Mass on vocals, Brad Skibinski on drums, Lauren Stevenson on guitar, and Andrea Roberts on bass and vocals. Black Mass spoke with Andrea, Sarah, and Brad about Winnipeg's upcoming Arson Fest, politics and punk rock, and gender and extreme music. Hi, Andrea, Sarah, and Brad. Welcome to Black Mask.
Hi there.
Hi.
Kursk is playing a festival in Winnipeg this weekend. Can you tell us a bit about it?
It's called Arson Fest. This is the 10th year that it's been running. I think it's the longest running DIY festival in Western Canada. It's a 3-day festival again this year. It's been anywhere from 1 to 3 days, I believe. This year, it's a benefit to... for a powwow to honor children that had died as a result of violence.
Can you guys tell us a little bit more about powwow to honor children?
It's happening Saturday, September 5th at the Winnipeg Indiana Métis Friendship Centre at 45 Robinson Street. And it was started to honor children and who have died of violent deaths and their families that survived them.
Basically, it's a benefit to kind of defray the costs of putting on this powwow. It's kind of a gathering to show support for families who have survived their children dying as a result of violence in the community in whatever form. I think it's an important thing to have support for people coming together in non-institutionalized ways to deal with things that are specific to their own communities. And it's kind of a good way for us as people who are sort of in solidarity with communities but not necessarily directly a part of them to kind of come together and make a small contribution to it, kind of show our support for it.
What are the Arson Fest venues this year? Like, where can people go to check out shows?
All 3 days are at the Rudolph Rocker Cultural Center, which is on the third floor of 91 Albert. I believe all of the days start, the doors open between 7 and 8. I think it's 7 the first day, the Friday night, 7:30 Saturday, and maybe 8 o'clock Sunday. You can check at, there's a MySpace site for it if you go to the Kursk MySpace site, which is now not even a Kursk MySpace site. Yeah, if you go to mountelgon.n3.net, you can get all the details for Arson Fest this year.
Just going into why the Kursk MySpace site isn't a Kursk MySpace site anymore. Over the past year, Black Mask has been reporting on copyright and intellectual property issues, especially as they pertain to the internet and file sharing. But you guys are facing a copyright issue that's in kind of a different arena. And I'm wondering if you could fill in listeners on what's going on.
Well, it's probably something that we might not have even faced had we not made the decision to have a MySpace page. Because we had a profile on the internet, another band or person actually that has a recording project found us and contacted us in 2007 asking us to change our name, and we've just laughed it off, being a DIY band that makes no money, and that's not what we're in it for, and even if we were, we wouldn't be making it at the present. So we just kind of forgot about it, and then we got a letter from MySpace saying that we had to erase the page, or they were looking at a concern from this person that had actually gone ahead and trademarked the band name in the States And so now we are facing either getting lawyers and fighting this thing in court, or just giving it up and realizing that most likely it's not worth it, and that's not something that we could really afford to follow up on. So,
Yeah, and it's somewhat complicated because in that case, you know, the onus is more or less on the person who's challenging. It's actually a trademark that he has on the name, and it's the onus is on the person who's challenging the trademark once it's been established to prove that first usage wasn't X number of years ago. And for this case, it's, I think, 1995 he's talking about. So you can imagine the amount of work that would go into actually tracing someone's activity back that far and trying to disprove that they had actually used it that far ago. So, and, you know, something that we never really worried about. I think there's at least a dozen different Kursks, or has been a dozen different Kursks in all areas of the world, and this is the first guy who's actually taken it upon himself to be a big enough dick to actually do something about it. So, you know, he's a very industry-centric kind of guy, and, you know, he seems like he has more money than he knows what to do with. He should probably just spend it recording a record instead of worrying about us.
Basically, all we've done so far is just erase our MySpace, and I think that we're deciding on what next step we're going to do, but as of right now, we don't exist on MySpace, and that's basically, hopefully, all this little wiener needs to see from us.
Yeah, we actually just moved the profile. It's it's myspace.com/spinthepastforwarddarkly, all one word. But, you know, whatever. It might disappear. It might just become defunct. It's really kind of besides the point. It's kind of a laughable thing, all in all.
Especially when we have relationships with the other Kursks that are out there in the world. There's one from Finland, I think, that we're friends with. And, you know, it doesn't have to be something that is this ridiculous court battle that he's looking for, you know. So.
Maybe we'll stop for a, we'll go to a music break right now. What's the this track that we're going to hear?
Yeah, this first song is called Rewind. It's actually on the new recentest record that will be coming out soon with Half Gorilla. This song is a song about getting defeated by the world around you, basically, and trying to break through that. That's what this song's about. So, yeah, here we go.
We'll be right back.
That was Rewind off of Kursk's newest or soon-to-be-released split with Half Gorilla. Punk, hardcore, and grindcore scenes are often typified by stereotypically masculine aesthetics. Bands, more often than not, are fronted by men. There's largely male fan bases. Pits generally have a higher percentage of men in them than women. I'm wondering, how does this impact how you perform, if it does at all? And I guess the flip side of it, too, being how does your performance or your presence in a scene, do you feel, impact that scene?
I think that when I first started playing music, it was from a place of, you know, interest in music and love of music, but it was also from a place of anger. And I think that a lot of people that get into punk rock, that's obviously the place where it comes from, is a dissatisfaction with the way things are. And for me personally, it always had to do with gender and sexuality and violence and wanting to address those things. But I think now, having been involved in it for a number of years and gone through a bunch of different stages with how I feel about it, I forget about that stuff when I'm on stage now, or stage, whatever, when I'm standing on a floor in front of a bunch of people that are also on the same floor. I don't even think about gender now. And I think that's the best thing about it, is that it's the one time in my life that I don't think about gender, that I just like have this cathartic thing that I get to do, and I get to go hang out with friends, and I feel, you know, a part of something that's important to me. And I think if impacting other people is a part of that, then that's kind of like a added thing for me, because, you know, I've had people tell me that, you know, it's great to see three women, what it used to be three women, and now just me and Sarah up there doing what we're doing. And, you know, it feels good. It's also, it's just something that comes naturally, I guess. Like, it's...
Definitely there's times when I feel like the battle has been won in some sorts. For example, just being able to tour as a younger female in like a genre that doesn't have a lot of that. There was times when I felt like it felt pretty awesome and special. For me personally, just growing up, definitely there was times when I felt not part of things because of my gender. But most of the time, same as with Andrea, I do like most of the time feel a part of something that has nothing to do with the fact that I'm female and other people have, you know, are males or vice versa or whatnot. So it goes both ways.
So Andrea, you said that you've gotten to a point now where when you're performing, you don't really think about gender, or it's not something that's on your radar. When I read interviews or you know, articles about women or with women who are in the punk rock scenes, and really other scenes for that matter, like hip hop scenes and things like that, more often than not, I find those interviews or articles are framed in a context of placing women either as sort of caretakers of a scene or archivers of a scene, or it's either that, or it's women can rock just as hard or play just as loud or, you know, be just as intense as men. I guess that's specifically for punk rock, but you see it sort of in hip hop and stuff too. Like, I remember reading an article on Queen Latifah. It was an old article, where it talks about how she could throw down as good as any man type thing. So there's this projection of a binary, I think, in these scenes. And I'm wondering, you don't think about it now, but maybe when you were starting, did you find that you were having to like sort of be one or the other, or felt pressure to be one or the other? Or do you feel that there's room to queer gender?
I think it's telling that in aggressive music scenes anyways, there is this idea that anger, and this is culturally too, anger is a male thing, and the expression of anger is always seen as male. And if you are a woman who is expressing that type of anger, especially in abrasive music that most people would not want to listen to, that they don't find, you know, pleasing or pretty or any of those things that are stereotypically female, you know, I think there, it's, you have to carve out your own idea of what that means to you, you know, like, what is it? I thought a lot about, like, what, like, the essentialist idea of, like, a female voice being, like, you know, oh, the voice doesn't have those characteristics, you know, like, that doesn't have, like, a low, gruff idea, you know, like, when I was in choir when I was a kid, I sang tenor, you know, like, I could, and they were, I was told not to, I sing alto, you know, like, alto is for girls, tenor is boys, and then if you're any lower than that, then we have some problems, you know, like, and I've always been, like, outside of any idea of what gender. Well, not outside of gender, obviously no one has that privilege, but you know, I've always been interested in, and my life is kind of about, you know, questioning those things. And I think that you probably want to say something.
I think specific to the like, you know, the idea of interviews and reviews and how it comes off to people, there's definitely like a certain subtext to it that I think that people who appreciate it outside of those ideas, that I don't think it becomes an issue. Like, we've had a lot of support from all kinds of people, and not necessarily where you would expect it either, you know. So I think that it comes down to what the person's perception is, or where they're at with, like, what they think about those issues, more so than it is with where we're at with it. Because, you know, we've been lucky enough to have the support of people who are into that idea. And sometimes, you know, like, we've also had a lot of support from people who that idea doesn't really cross their mind, but it's not something that, it's not a filter that they see us through either. So that's kind of complimentary, I think. And I think we've kind of avoided pandering to that filter too. Like, we will play festivals that are like, you know, Clit Fest in Minneapolis. We played in 2005, was it? Something like that. And it was a great experience. It's not something that I think we all talked about, not pigeonholing ourselves and not putting ourselves in that kind of position to be constantly referred to as that, or to make ourselves like spokespersons for that idea of like gender in music, or, you know, nothing against people that do that. Obviously it's important, and, you know, it probably contributes to us being able to not do that.
I think also sometimes when you're playing festivals or supporting things within the context of grindcore or punk rock, like, sometimes politically my ideas of like what feminism means, or like what queer you know, queer existence might mean, like, kind of doesn't really mesh sometimes, or it meshes, but there's differences there, you know, like, when you're coming at it, I don't know how to explain that, you know, but at Clitfest it was different, you know, it was like, it was mostly, it was celebrating this idea of femaleness and womanhood, and I feel like as a band and as a person, my idea of gender is larger than that, and my idea of even my own gender is larger than that, so I think for us, it was really good to go there and be around a bunch of women that were making music. But for us, like, I've had my ideas and my assumptions of men challenged in this band over and over again. And I've actually, strangely enough, been able to heal over other stuff in being in a grindcore band, you know, of being like, oh, wow, that guy who I completely assumed was going to be this certain way to me was really great to me. And I had this kind of affirming experience, or, you know, not to say we haven't had really crappy experiences, because everyone has, you know, but for the most part, you know, it is, like Brad said, like, for interviews and or things like that, and like you said too, it's like a projection of an ideal, and we all do it, you know, whether it's a binary idea of gender or just like, you know, assuming who you sleep with because they look at you and assume something. So
I feel like growing up, I mean, when I joined the band, I was 19, so for me it was a great way for me to feel supported and be supported by other females, and also like males too. Like, it helped me as a family solidate who I am in, like, in my gender, in my idea of myself, and the way that I feel about the music and the art that I put myself into, or my politics or anything. And I feel like that's what's important to me about for myself personally, about the way that we go about our things, instead of it being an issue. It's just it's what it is, and we all like it's very non-challenged, basically. What like for what for if we're going to be playing a Clipfest festival, or if we're going to be playing in Rochester, New York with Calabas, you know, it's still we're still ourselves, and we still present ourselves the same way because we are solidly playing music because we love it. So that's what I don't know, for me personally, it's really helped me, and I'm very lucky to be a part of this.
So we're going to go to another track.
We're going to listen to The Vulture's Eye, and it's off of a split with a band from the Czech Republic called Lycanthropy. And I think this song is kind of about some of the stuff we've just been talking about.
It's The Vulture's Eye is about a song about sometimes not being able to feel like you own the things that you decide to do, feeling like you need to push through that and realize that each individual owns every day for themselves and the choices that they make for themselves, they own.
That was The Vulture's Eye off of Kursk's split with Lycanthropy. Punk has a long tradition of presenting itself as a politically charged genre. Do you think that punk or hardcore or grindcore or extreme music in general has the ability to raise people's consciousness? Do you think it can inform people on a radical level?
I think that the most powerful stuff that deals with that sort of thing, I mean, obviously, everything that's going on now has benefited from decades of bands writing whatever way that they write, whether it's political or not political, or just, you know, kind of putting themselves in the context of whatever scene is going on at the time or regionally where they're at and what's going on in their lives. But I guess to get back to the question, at this point, I think it's tough. It's tough to come out and actually say something that people haven't heard a whole bunch of times and to say it in a way that relates to an actual view of the world around you that people aren't just going to, you know, it's hard to make it so that it's not one-dimensional. I think there's a lot of potential for provoking thought. I think there's a lot of potential for provoking examinations of different things that are going on around, especially these days. People have so much access to information that I think, you know, for myself personally, the things that I appreciate the most in that vein are things that make me look at something a little bit differently or make me consider a different facet or the way that something I'm already reading about on the internet fits in with my worldview or what's going on locally around me in my community or with my friends or anything like that. So I think it's kind of at the point now where if you're going to come out and start writing stuff like that, you kind of have to put that extra effort into it to make it into a message that means something to people beyond just like reciting an idea and expecting people to soak it up and take it on for themselves and have it alter part of their life.
I feel like it's still, like, both, I mean, all grindcore, hardcore, and punk are all still very expanding. Like, it's a music genre that's still expanding and still quite active. And, like, for each generation, there's kids who haven't heard or haven't been around this kind of force of, like, I don't know, of energy, of knowledge, of, or whatever, right? So I feel like it's, yeah, I feel like it's very influential.
I think that some bands have definitely changed things that I've been doing in my life. Even recently, I've been impacted by things. I mean, that kind of sounds like you stop changing or growing at a certain point. But, you know, I'm getting older too, and you think, like, maybe I, you know, I'm old and I don't get inspired by punk rock anymore, but I do, and it changes choices that I make. And I think also what I think about it now is that it's not just the music, but the way in which the music is presented, the community that gets built around it, the conversations that happen within that community, the way people put their music out is not relying on the industry and not relying on people to figure out how to do this. And it sounds almost cliche, but it's such a different process that you make friends with people all around the world and you learn about all sorts of things that, you know, you wouldn't if you were just sitting in your town trying to figure out how to get rich and famous, you know? So it may start with, like, okay, I'm questioning everything around me and I'm angry about all this stuff, but, you know, I think it leads to other places that are probably a little bit more interesting in the long run.
When you write and perform, do you write and perform as a political band?
I think that we do a bit of both. I think that a lot of, like, Sarah and me kind of share lyrical stuff. Brad writes once in a while, too. We all kind of pitch in, but it's mostly Sarah. And, like, a lot of the stuff is overtly political, but always from a, I don't know, I think that there's not much kind of rhetoric thrown in. It's usually, like, questioning things or, you know, with an eye to the writing, I guess. I think we're all really interested in good writing, so we try to make the words interesting. A lot of times it's personal experiences of things that could be understood as political.
Yeah, I pretty much, like, a lot of our songs, as Andrea said, we share most of all the writing. For even, like, earlier 7 inches, we all pitched in for writing actually for entire songs, which is great. But yeah, mostly I would say that we're a political band in the sense that all of our songs are definitely about politics or, like, pushing through, about the world around us, about our community that we interact with every day, about social politics, about how to wake up in the morning.
Yeah, it depends on what's going on in the world at the moment, you know, and, like, I can look back at records that we've made and see, you know, oh, I remember what was happening in 2006 by reading our lyrics that we wrote about at the time, you know, and I think as musically, we write collectively, and I've been in other projects with people where one person will come and bring a fully written song, and then everyone just kind of adds their parts to it. And so we write really slowly because there's never been one person that's brought a finished song, and we always have an opinion that gets heard and might not get applied, but, you know, it could take us 6 months to write one song sometimes because of it. But I think that we've been inspired by bands like The X and other bands that come from the kind of, like, anarchist, like, writing tradition too of music and seeing what they've done in the past and wanting to apply that to what we've done.
When you play a show and you look out into the scene or your community, with everything that you've just said, do you feel like you're succeeding on that level? Do you think people are changing?
Do I think people are changing? I'm not really too sure. I guess there's definitely been moments where we've had conversations, maybe not every show, or, you know, maybe not even every month or every like 6 months that we play or whatever, but it definitely, you see more of that sort of thing when you're outside of your own, you know, outside of Winnipeg, where, you know, in Winnipeg we might know, you know, 75% of the crowd. So we've had these conversations on a day-to-day basis, and there's no real, you know, need to check in and update every time you play a show or anything like that, because you know what these people are about and they know what you're about for the most part. I think that mostly, I think that that sort of thing maybe sets in when people take the records home and read the lyrics and actually look at the aesthetic of what we're doing apart from us playing live. And I would hope that like our live stuff is interesting enough that people would want to do that or take the time to kind of investigate further what ideas are behind the actual, you know, getting up and playing a show. Cause that is sometimes just, you know, takes up so much energy just to be there and make things go off, correctly, you know, just making sure the show goes off without a hitch sort of thing, that sometimes maybe that might not get communicated as directly as it could. I mean, definitely things like lyric sheets and having your lyrics printed and being at the merch table and interacting with people afterwards, if they have anything to say, that's where you're gonna wind up hearing it from them.
I think it's true that it's really important to play elsewhere for us, because it keeps us inspired and excited about what we've been doing. And you do hear back from people in places where, you know, people are so excited when bands come to town, because, you know, they're dealing with whatever the thing is about their town that drives them crazy, you know, like whether you're in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where the entire town seems to be just fodder for religious missionaries, and all of the shows that happen are happening in religious spaces and things like that, so kids have a lot to rant about, you know. And these are things that you don't hear about living and playing in Winnipeg, where, you know, it's this type of music that you're only going to be playing to a few people that choose that enjoy it. So given the size of our town, it's just kind of, you know, it's good to be elsewhere and hear what people are saying.
Yeah, for example, like being in Detroit, we had a really good show in Detroit at this space called the Trombleplex that's been around since the late 60s as an artist kind of collective space. And we've been hearing about it for years and really wanted to go there and see this space. And we went there and the show was good, and had a really good time meeting everyone. And a couple of the people that we met were actually people who had lived in the neighborhood for 30, 40 years. And they came to the show and hung out with us afterwards and kind of took us on a tour of the neighborhood, like showing, you know, telling us basically about the history of the actual neighborhood and the house. And it was really cool to have that kind of overarching continuous viewpoint of what was going on in the neighborhood, because the space that we were playing in is pretty bombed out, and it's a very, like, you know, desperate looking kind of town in parts. So it was cool to, you know, like have someone that had sort of a political viewpoint on the community that we were in, but it also wasn't overtly like a political thing. We didn't sit down and discuss theory. We walked around and looked at someone's neighborhood and heard, in their words, how things had evolved. And, you know, it's obvious looking at it that there's greater economic forces and social forces at work. And, you know, you kind of know all those things, but until you see it firsthand, it's hard to put those facts and, you know, the way that it actually impacts communities on a daily basis together sometimes. So that was really useful. That's one of the things that I really enjoyed about the last tour. It seemed like we were meeting those sorts of folks that were not necessarily directly involved in the scene, but were there anyway and were happy to hang out and tell you about their lives.
I'm wondering then, how do you feel about genres that come out of a radical aesthetic but often don't deal with any kind of political content? And I'm thinking of things like gore grind and stuff like that.
I think that it's just, it exists, and I guess I'm trying to say that whatever exists out there, I don't necessarily have to have an opinion on it, I guess. Like, there's no one is beholden to an aesthetic that it came out of, you know, just because, you know, this is musically influenced by that. There's no reason that this should be, that I should judge something because it doesn't have any political content to it, you know. Personally, I'm not interested in a lot of gore grind specifically because it has a lot of gnarly, misogynist, disgusting things that to me are just kind of childish and silly. And that's taken me a long time to think of them as silly. I, you know, used to get a lot more pissed off about it. But I don't have to come into contact with it, so it's just kind of like TV for me, you know? It's like, I'm not going to get mad about what's on the news. You know, I don't watch TV, you know? Like, I can maybe read the news on the internet so I can choose. You know, I don't have to watch the broadcasters or whatever. You know, I don't have to watch CNN. I don't have to listen to Gore Grind. It's not a problem. Unless we get into a situation where, you know, we're playing a show, which I think we've made choices, you know? It's like, we can play whatever we want to, and whatever you do, you have control over that. You have the control to say, actually, no, we're not going to play with your band that's called whatever vaginal part. I'm going to do something to it, you know? That's the name that, you know, it's everywhere. And it's really, you know, teenagers in camel shorts, as someone else perfectly put it. But, yeah.
I think there, even within something like Gore Grind, there's a huge differentiation between bands that are out to you know, just be shitty people and, you know, just shock people or whatever else, and bands that are kind of like, you know, it's kind of like watching a horror movie in some cases. You know, it's done for shock value and not necessarily to with the intent to like go out and degrade someone. You know what I mean? So even within that, you're kind of dealing with it on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you play this type of music, this is a conversation that you have a lot, you know? There's always something that brings it up. And I think for me, there's just so many more horrific things that happen in the world that are way more terrifying than someone's make-believe fantasy of violence that they're using to, I don't know, compensate for something else, but or express some sort of strange deviated anger. But I mean, I have my own form of deviated anger, but I choose it a different way. I don't know, I'm no better than anyone else.
I definitely don't only listen to like music or bands who have something to say. I listen to a lot of goofy crap, and some of the stuff I listen to is pretty like silly. I mean, but yeah, so that's what I think. There's a time and place for everything. I don't think there's a time and place, a lot of time for half the gore grind crap. That's just what I think. But there's a time and place for everything, and music's music, and it makes you feel whatever you need to feel at the time.
I'd much rather listen to Exhumed than like bands that pretend to be political just for the sake of having a niche market, though.
Okay, I love Exhumed too.
I'm just trying to figure out how we're going to wrap this up now.
Well, I can help you with that.
Right.
The last song that we're going to play, if we're going to play another song, is called We Will Be Peacekeepers for the Dead. And it's about the perception of Canadian armed forces that's around the world that seems to finally be changing as people understand that we are no longer peacekeepers, and that we've been actively involved in a number of conflicts around the world. And it's on the upcoming Split 7-Inch with Half Gorilla from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We'll be right back.
That was We'll Be Peacekeepers for the Dead by Kursk, and it's off of their upcoming split with Half Gorilla. So Arsonfest is this weekend. You guys are playing on the second day. What else do people need to know?
Yeah, we're playing on the first day, actually.
Oh, sorry, playing on the first day.
Yeah, I'll give you the basic rundown. It's at 91 Albert Street at the Rudolph Rocker Cultural Center on the third floor. It's above the Mondragon. Doors at 7 on Friday. I believe it's 7:30 on Saturday and 8 o'clock on Sunday. And you can find more details about that at mountelgon.n3.net. mountelgon.n3.net. There's weekend passes available at War on Music, which is also right in that neighborhood. It's at 93 Albert underneath the Fix. There's a couple of other places that you can get tickets to, but you should come there and get them.
And the powwow to honor children who have died as a result of violence is on Saturday, September 5th at the Winnipeg Indiana Métis Friendship Center at 45 Robinson Street. The grand entries are at 1 and 7 p.m. and the feast is at 5.
Yeah, come out, everybody.
All right, guys. Thanks very much for stopping in and talking.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You have been listening to an interview with Sarah Mass, Brad Skibinski, and Andrea Roberts of the Winnipeg grindcore band Kursk on Black Mass, the frequency of resistance, CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Kursk will be playing at Winnipeg's Arson Fest this upcoming weekend at the Rudolph Rocker Cultural Center, located on the third floor of 91 Albert Street. Oh, yeah.